kwakuwamkwamnyako nauvuku naundukufu hata milele.
Broadcasting from high above the reserve, this is Radio Harambe. Jambo, everyone, and welcome to episode 8 of Radio Harambe, the official podcast of JamboEveryone.com and the unofficial podcast of Disney's Animal Kingdom and Walt Disney World. We do invite you to visit us at JamboEveryone.com for all the information you need on the Animal Kingdom Park. On this show, we will talk about the news from the Animal Kingdom and the rest of Walt Disney World, and then in our final segment, take an in-depth look at Flights of Wonder. I am Dave McBride, coming to you from the Radio Harambe studios, and joining us from somewhere in the world, a man who prefers to use the words scat or dung, it is Safari Mike. Mike, how are you today?
I am well, Jumbo, and I'm coming from Samburu in Kenya. Have you ever been to Samburu?
I was there. I think they have a Club Med there, right?
Yeah, they do. They do. It's right down the block from the herd of Grevy Zebra that we are tracking. Excellent. And keeping tabs of. So that's where I am.
Now, Grevy zebras are mm-hmm. one of the five species that we actually have a partnership with their conservation organization. So we do. Now, Mike, say a little bit about the Grevys, because there's very few of them left, correct?
Sure. Unlike the plain zebra that you see in, well, the nasty zebras from the Kilimanjaro safaris, the Grevys are, they look more like donkeys than horses like the plain zebra do. They're a little bit bigger, and they have the white belly underneath, and they're highly endangered. They're limited to very dry, arid areas of both Kenya and Ethiopia. So they're running out of space, and as such, they're highly endangered.
So if you want to help keep them in the wild, you can go to our conservation page, JamboEveryone.com, and you can actually go straight to them through our page there, straight through the Grevy Zebra Trust, and you can make a donation. We get nothing for that. We just ask that you do it. And also joining us on today's show is a great friend of the show. It is Andrew of the Disney Hipsters. Andrew, how are you?
I'm good. I'm glad you actually included me in the introduction. For like 5 seconds, I forgot that I was on the show and I thought I was just listening. That was the most long-winded introduction about Grevy zebras I ever heard in my life.
Well, Mike,
that's
is,
okay.
Mike
okay.
is the only guy who could talk about Grevy zebras for
that's
more
okay.
than a sentence.
I have a little tidbit about Samburu National Reserve here off Wikipedia. Apparently there's a lioness famous for adopting antelope calves. So I'm just saying, if there is a lioness that will adopt calves of an antelope, that's pretty badass.
That's very cool.
Can I say badass on your show?
Sure.
Is that like a thing?
No, cool. It's not a thing.
Cool.
It's a nature show. I mean, that's a
yeah, you know. A badass, a right. Somali wild ass.
Exactly.
Perfect.
You can't take
perfect.
That. Okay, guys, let's go through the first segment here of the Animal Kingdom news, the local news. The first story of the day is one of these kind of cool things that we like to mention when it happens at the Animal Kingdom. It is Vulture Awareness Day. This week at the Animal Kingdom, they celebrate vultures, and according to the Disney Park blogs, they say guests can find out all about vultures during special activities in celebration of International Vulture Awareness Day. That's on September 5th, and they're also doing it at the Lodge on September 7th.
Ooh.
Yeah, at the Animal Kingdom, they'll do activities near the Tree of Life, where there actually is a vulture display there.
Uh-huh.
And there's stuff at Rafiki's Planet Watch. And at the Animal Kingdom Lodge, they're going to have more kind of activities in the Jumbo House. And like I said, year-round, you can see the vultures right in front of the Tree of Life.
You know where you can also see plenty of vultures? On stinking Kilimanjaro safaris. Like, you see more vultures than any other animal. I'm like, where do all these vultures come from? It turns out they just fly in and land there. And they just like to eat all the fish that they give the hippos or what. No, I guess hippos don't eat fish. Or the flamingos.
Vultures and pelicans. Aren't there a bunch of pelicans sometimes?
Well, yeah, those pelicans are supposed to be there, though. The pinkback pelicans, those are supposed to be there. That's a part of the attraction. The vultures, right. They're turkey vultures that are native to, I guess, the American Southeast. And they just sort of land in there get all up in my way.
There's turkey vultures up by us here in New Jersey.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Turkey vultures, they're all over the place. They're very adaptable.
And there's black vultures sometimes on that ride, too.
Oh, yeah. They're just all over the place. And there's all, but they're not supposed to be.
And there's also a black vulture on the Flights of Wonder to prelude to our topic later on.
Oh, there is. Yeah, you're right. The part about how they eat carrion. You're right.
Yep. What I love about these days is that these things that they do when they pick vultures, it's like when they pick bats, you know, they pick something that a lot of times they pick something that people would not find cute or cuddly or something like that, just to kind of do like a little awareness day about what they mean. And
it's awesome that they do that. Vultures are so fascinating and important to the environment, you know, the way that they clean up after everything and just like their way of being is so, again, it's totally badass. You know, they throw up food at enemies to get them to go away. It's amazing. It's how I am on a Saturday night.
All right, the next story. Yeah, this is kind of a sad story, it's hard to, we don't have a lot of information on this, but according to local news reports, apparently, a 6-year-old girl fell off the third floor of her balcony.
Wow.
At the Animal Kingdom Lodge. Yeah. It happened over Labor Day weekend. All we know is the girl was taken to the hospital and she's believed to be in stable condition. As far as I can see, Mike, I don't know if you've seen anything different on this. That's all I know. I mean, I know that Disney said that there was no contact with the animal. She fell in a spot that was, you know, in a place where she wouldn't have contact. There's no animals at the Animal Kingdom Lodge that they would be all that afraid of her having contact with anyway.
Right.
Yeah, the animals are kept pretty far back. You'd have to go down and out pretty far.
Are we sure that she would even had a savanna view? You know what I mean?
Yeah, who knows?
Who knows? Like, she might have just wanted to, like, look at the pool or something. But going back to what you were saying, if she does fall onto the savanna, there are quite a few animals that get past the little electric fence, actually. Like, don't you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
How, like, the birds, the various the birds can get over. Yeah, absolutely. And the guinea fowl, too.
Right.
You know, I mean, there are animals that get past the little fence or whatever, and they don't seem to dissuade that, so who knows?
Now, Mike, as a longtime member of a zoo, a worker at a zoo, this is not an unusual occurrence.
No. No. It's unfortunately not. At the zoos, though, you generally don't have the problem of being 3 or 4 stories up in the air when it happens.
Right, right.
It's usually falling, 10 feet or so. The real problem is falling into exhibits where, you know, predator animal like tigers or polar bears or whatnot. I hope she's okay. I guess it sounds like she's okay.
Yeah.
Do we even know if it was Jumbo House or Kidani Village? Do we have any idea?
They haven't said that, no.
Yeah.
They've said nothing.
This is the first I've heard about it, actually, to be honest with you. I guess if she was seriously, seriously hurt, it would have been all over the news.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds like her own fault. So, I mean,
It's on the local news, and it came out a few days afterwards.
Yeah.
And so I keep getting on my news feeds and stuff. So it is definitely a story that people have talked about. I just think because, the age of the girl, they just kind of removed it from... You know, they just didn't want to get too much information. So it took a few days before any of it came out.
Yeah, so. Totally.
So we wish her the best.
Yeah, it's a family's business. It's not really anyone else's business. Yeah.
So we wish her the best. And if there is any other further information, obviously check the blog. And if I get any other kind of information on it, I'll pass it along. Here is the next story. And this is actually one that I'm sure will spark a little conversation. Disney announced this week that they will be testing a direct bus route between the Animal Kingdom and the downtown Disney area. Now, I believe this is the first time Disney has ever offered direct service between a theme park and downtown Disney. The test runs through October, and Animal Kingdom is the only theme park that is being offered this service. So you won't be able to take a direct bus from any other one, only the Animal Kingdom.
So that's a half-truth, because they actually did offer... between Downtown Disney and theme parks years ago, and they stopped doing that. I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, because people were abusing the privilege.
I think it was
I mean, it definitely existed at one point, but people were apparently abusing the privilege.
Abusing it in that they were trying
parking at Downtown Disney and taking buses.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, which, I mean, you know, that's a crappy thing to do. And it seems like that, like, just pay the money. You know, that's such a long ride, you know, and such a pain to park the Downtown Disney parking lot, which has no parking available.
Yeah, there are, you know? There are much more convenient ways of
getting. Oh my gosh, so many. So many. Make a reservation at the Wave and just don't go.
Yeah.
You know, go to, I mean, that's like, that's what we do. You know?
Yeah, I mean, thankfully they're doing, I mean, because it's such a pain. I mean, I've been there where, you know, we've left Illuminations at 9 o'clock and we just felt like, you know, or 9:30, whatever it was, going to Downtown Disney to walk around with it. And you can't, unless you have a car, it's like impossible.
Yeah.
So this is, I like this. I like this idea.
But they're also, we can also assume that they're doing this because they're turning the parking situation at Downtown Disney into a complete disaster over the next couple of months.
Of course.
So let's not pretend like this is being offered as some sort of great perk for guests of the Animal Kingdom.
Well, I mean, to be fair, I mean, you are dissuading resort guests who use the bus from going to Downtown Disney at, you know, 9:30 after Illuminations. If you're staying at wherever, Animal Kingdom Lodge, you use the buses, Epcot, you know, you go to Illuminations, it's 9:30. What are you going to do to get to Downtown Disney? Go back to your hotel and then go to by the time you get there, it's like 11 o'clock.
Forget it.
I'm going to bed. Yeah, this is at least going to bring people to Disney Springs or whatever you want to call it and, you know, create some more shopping and stuff like that. So it's, you know, it makes some sense in that regard.
Is it going to be weird the first time a bus rolls around and it doesn't say Downtown Disney, it says Disney Springs?
I'm still not a big fan of that name.
I don't like it at all. No. It sounds like a retirement home.
Yeah, it sounds like a retirement home. It sounds like a golf course. It sounds like the hotel on the other side of the lake.
Well, that's the thing. They're tying them together, Saratoga and Disney Springs. They're tying the storyline together, apparently, I guess, like the theming-wise. That's just what I heard.
Well, that's...
Yeah.
But they're not, you know, it's still...
Horrible.
I mean, it just doesn't.
It's just not great. I mean, Saratoga Springs is horrible too. So,
right.
You know, it doesn't shock.
And finally, our final story in the local news segment, the Disney Worldwide Conservation Fund has reached a milestone of 1,000 grants awarded to conservation projects around the world.
That's amazing.
It is. Basically, what the DWCF does, just so for people who don't know, is they send money to projects and organizations that are on the ground actually doing the conservation work. The money is raised by guests at the Animal Kingdom, those little pins that you see, the buttons that they have around the park. Also, there are certain places where they have, I know, certain tours, portion of the money goes to the DWCF. There's also some merchandise that does that as well. Then Disney matches the funds, and then the company also covers any of their operation costs for the DWCF. Each year, they take portions of this money that they make, and they kind of divvy it out to all these different conservation funds. I believe that every one of the five of our conservation partners were all once recipients of a grant from the DWCF. You know, the cynic would say that the DWCF was formed to sort of, you know, cut the animal rights activists off at the pass before they could, you know, start protesting Disney.
Totally.
And that's really what it was. But in the long term, it has turned into, at least in my opinion, it's turned into one of the best things that Walt Disney World itself does. And one of the few things where they actually do, you know, raise these funds and encourage people to do this kind of stuff. So it's a milestone worth mentioning, I would say.
Yeah, totally. Amazing. Yeah, I love it. I you know, I'll randomly, you know, I'll throw them a dollar when I'm at Animal Kingdom, but I never take the button.
No.
Just don't take the button. Then you're like giving them twice as much money. You know, they waste so much money on those buttons. You'd think people would be happy enough to just not get a button.
And plus, they have so many of them. I mean,
it's ridiculous.
You can have your buttons everywhere.
Yeah. It's hard to get a definitive list of where this money goes, though. I've tried.
Well, they announce on the DWCF portion, because, you know, all the stuff for Disney is done through Disney through the One Disney portal for their website. And there is a section that is dedicated to the DWCF. And every year, Mike, I want to say it was probably around April, right? Sometime in the spring, where they do release a PDF of at least all the organizations they granted money to. I'm not 100% sure that they say how much exactly.
I don't think they say how much. I don't think
That's good though that they list the organizations. I've never been able to find them, and I'm like a terribly skeptical person, you know.
Yeah.
So I tried to find it before and I never could, but that's good to know.
Well, I'll tell you, when I was looking for conservation partners, I used that list as sort of a reference point to find these organizations, because how else would you find them, you know?
Right, totally.
And I went and cross-referenced, because even the organizations then print where, you know, post where they received money from. So, and a lot of them have made kind of a deal out of getting Disney funds. And I know, Mike, that a lot of these organizations, I mean, they work on like a shoestring budget, you know, and
some of them, and
some of them, you know, to have a relationship with an organization as big as Disney has to mean a lot for some of these things. I mean, for instance, the Grevy Zebra one we were talking about before, there's only a handful of people that I'm aware of that are even part of that organization. So it's got to be difficult.
Yeah, I mean, some of them are partners. Some of them are bigger than others. Like the Diane Fossey one's bigger than some of the others. But yeah, that one, the guys, the parrot guys, the Arrow Project.
Right.
They're just a few guys sitting in the rainforest in Colombia rehabbing parrots. It's released into the wild. I mean, so any little bit helps them.
And that is it for the local news. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, Safari Mike is going to take us through the world news from the rest of the Walt Disney World. Be back on Radio Harambe in just a second. Jennifer Green of Destinations in Florida is the official travel partner of Radio Harambe and JomboEveryone.com. Jen can do everything you need done in order to book your next Walt Disney World vacation and have the time of your life. She is an expert in everything Disney and will remove all the stress of booking your trip. And she is as committed to conservation as we are. So every vacation you book, or even every quote you request, means Jen and Destinations in Florida will make a donation to the Jombo Everyone conservation effort. You can contact Jen directly by emailing her at jennifer.g@destinationsinflorida.com or by calling her directly at 443-424-0181. You can also head over to jomboeveryone.com and click the Destinations in Florida icon to get your vacation started. Seriously, what can be better than booking a Disney World vacation while helping to save wildlife? Welcome back to Radio Harambe. I am Dave McBride. Joining me is Safari Mike from where again, Mike?
Samburu.
Samburu. And Andrew of the incomparable Disney Hipsters Empire, really. I mean, they have...
Yeah, well, apparently I'm not the brains of the Empire, so I'm going to go slit my wrists right now. I think you calling Jamie the brains of Disney Hipsters is the first time that Jamie and brains have been used in the first, like, a sentence together. Unless you mean like, cock off her brains.
It's called irony.
Was it ironic? I don't know.
No, she came up with it, I think.
Me and Adam were deeply offended, but if we're going with me being the beauty of the operation, I'm fine with that.
And she did, I think she did mention that.
Yeah, but she also mentioned Adam, so her opinion's really not worth much.
Right. Well, there's a reason why Jamie is the brains of the operation. We'll get to that later. I'll tell you where that comes
from.
Okay,
all right.
So let's get to the world news. Mike, what you got?
All right, let's first start off by talking about some coffee. The new Starbucks has opened in Epcot at the Fountain View, and with much less despair by the Disney.
Because it's beautiful. It's so beautiful.
Yeah, they did a nice job.
They did a phenomenal job.
First of all, you were taking away the Fountain View that absolutely nobody cared about.
I've never even been in there.
Yeah, I know. Now there's a reason.
I've literally never been in there.
That was the ice cream place, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I was in there a couple times.
So
very underwhelming.
It's really nice. I don't know. You like the wood? The woodwork inside the...
Yeah, I think the whole place looks great. The outside, the facade, I'm especially excited about. Because they used to have this awning, right? It was sort of a... I don't even know what it was. It just was horrible. Like a vinyl plastic sign saying "We have ice cream" or something like that, and like an Edie sign or something. Yeah. Really, really horrible. Oh, there was like metal scaffolding in the front too, with the sign on it. It was really, really horrible. Sort of mid-90s Epcot, you know, by which I mean bad Epcot. You know, it was just right. ugly. And now it at least has a cohesive aesthetic, you know. Not that Future World in general does, but this is a step in somewhat of a right direction, you know?
I agree with you. I agree with you absolutely. The outside is beautiful. The inside is fine. There's some woodworking there that's not very Future World-esque.
Right.
Yeah, but that's fine. I mean, I'm not going to, you know.
Yeah, that's getting a little nitpicky. It didn't stick out to me as bad, you know.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it bad. I would call it just not really future. Doesn't right. look like interventions, but that's fine. Like
right.
I said,
but venti strawberry frappuccinos aren't really very future world either. You know,
fair enough.
You know what I mean? It's like such a it's Starbucks. You know, we have to have it. We know we're getting it. It's going to be what it's going to be. They did the most with what they could with what they've been given. You know, an existing building, and it's a huge building. You know, I'm glad it looks so much better than it did.
And it's a good spot for it. I mean, that's the perfect way to put Starbucks in.
The discourse that really isn't being discussed or too much, you know, I mean, I brought it up several drunken occasions on Twitter because it really affects my life, is that it's going to change the dynamic of the opening of Epcot every morning significantly, because between FastPass Plus, which we'll get to in a minute, and Starbucks opening, no one is going to be going to the land anymore, because Sunshine Seasons used to be the only real breakfast option.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and now people don't have to run to get their fast passes for Soarin'. The traffic going over there in the morning is going to be almost non-existent. It's really going to change the dynamic of the park.
And absolutely. So Fast Pass Plus in and by itself would.
Oh, of course. But now you don't even have people going over there for breakfast. You know, because a lot of people do run over there, and I know it sounds shocking, but be it too young or too old to go on the attraction, you know, mm-hmm. Soarin', that is the attraction. I shouldn't imply that it's the only one, but, you know, Soarin', they would go to Sunshine Seasons and eat breakfast or have coffee or whatever. Now that place is going to not really have as much traffic, which is sad because it's great.
Yep. Hope it doesn't lose too much traffic.
Just my little tidbit, because if they take away the blueberry croissant bread pudding, I know Adam's going to be throwing a hissy fit like a little girl.
I've never had that. That's good.
Oh, it's very good. We put like 5 things of butter on it, which is really bad and amazing.
Well, I haven't even seen this Starbucks yet, so I'm going to have to defer to you guys in this one.
Oh, you'll like it. It's good.
In a related story, Disney has announced the 2 spots that Starbucks is going into at Downtown Disney, or I guess eventually Disney Springs. It's going to take over the Wetzel Pretzel Haagen-Dazs ice cream area over by Disney Quest. And then they're going to open up a little kiosk near the World of Disney in the Marketplace at some point. It's kind of taken the cue from what they did for the Disneyland Downtown Disney, where they opened up 2 separate spots for it. And that's what they're doing here.
Which is so funny, because Downtown Disney at Disneyland is so tiny. You know, it's almost non-existent. I can't believe there's room for 2. But I really don't. I don't mean physical room. I mean people-wise, like population-wise. I can't believe they need 2.
Right.
It just seems very weird to me.
One of them in Downtown Disney is also just like a little kiosk.
Right. Yeah, like an airport kind of kiosk thing.
Right. I don't even know if it's going to have the full. I mean, I'm assuming it's not going to have a menu. Maybe some baked items or something. But I don't think the full-blown menu that Starbucks.
No, I doubt it. I doubt that. I mean, I'm excited. I drink a lot of Starbucks. The problem with this is the lines are getting very blurred between real life and my vacation life, and I don't like that at all, because I drink Starbucks every day. I have one right down the street from my house and right next door to my work, so I'm there all the time. If I'm getting a venti iced coffee with soy milk unsweetened on vacation, I'd rather die, because I eat that at home. I'm not gonna eat kale on vacation either.
This is exactly my point with it from the very beginning.
It kind of bothers me a little bit.
I'm not interested in it. It doesn't do anything for me. I don't even know why they bothered, but whatever.
If it makes people happy, that's great, but I'm gonna be very hard pressed to actually ever get a coffee there, even though I love it. It's just that I don't want to think about my real life when I'm on vacation at all. And that'll just, you know, if they mess up my order, I'll be like, Amber at Starbucks in Montclair would never mess up my order. You know what I mean? And I don't ever want to have that thought.
Well, you're going to have it, so.
Yes, exactly.
To me, as long as they keep it to just like one spot in each park or so, I don't really care.
One well-themed spot. I don't really care. You're not scared about what's going to happen at Animal Kingdom? Because I kind of am.
I am.
But what are they going to do?
They're going to take away one of the existing locations.
I tend to doubt it.
Seriously, where are they going to build one?
Harambe.
No, it's going to be on Discovery Island. I am 99% sure.
Okay.
Or in the Oasis, to be perfectly honest.
It just doesn't belong there. It just doesn't belong there. It doesn't belong. I mean, the more and more I thought about it, Mike, you and I talked about this when I went into the Magic Kingdom, and I kind of threw a partial hissy fit about that because that drives me insane. The more and more I think about it, it belongs in one place, the Hollywood Studios, and that's it. Maybe the Epcot one is okay, but really, we have Starbucks in the future? Maybe we do. I don't know. But it just doesn't. Once you see a Starbucks sign and you're trying to tell me I'm in the future world, it just ruins that whole idea. And they've just done so much of punting away these themes and these aesthetics and these, you know, these things that make it special just to make a little bit of a, you know, a little dime off of whatever company wants to get involved here. And it's just when you put that Starbucks sign in the middle of if they put that Starbucks sign in the middle of Harambe, Mike, that will look completely ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
No matter how nice they make it, I don't care if they put an elephant off the top. It doesn't make any difference. You put a Starbucks sign in what's supposed to be a port of East Africa, it looks stupid.
There's a Starbucks in a port of East Africa somewhere. I'll bet you a dollar.
Oh, I'm sure there is.
I'm sure there is, but we don't think of it that way. And they're supposed to be making an illusion about you going to somewhere else, not going to Starbucks.
Yeah.
I mean, the original Disneyland, the whole Main Street was all sold spots.
That's the argument. Of course, they've had sponsors forever, and they always will. It's not. If this is more than a sponsorship, though. You know what I mean? It's more than a sponsorship. They're opening a Starbucks. You know, it's a little bit different. More in depth. And again, this takes me out of my vacation and puts me back in real life, which upsets me.
I mean,
I understand that argument, but I mean, we've talked about this before. I mean, Walt Disney had the Wizard of Bras on Main Street.
Yeah, but nobody knew. But you didn't go to that in every town. You didn't go to one of these in every town. That's what I'm saying. You can go two blocks in any direction and find a Starbucks in New Jersey. You know,
for the rest of the country, I'm assuming it is, right?
Well, it is.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess it is for here and for California and places like that. It just seems like
Nebraska. Let's pick Nebraska. Are there Starbucks like in pretty much every town? I don't even know.
I have no idea.
I don't know. I don't even know where Nebraska is.
But there's nothing unusual and exotic about Starbucks.
We have three Starbucks in my tiny little town that I live in. You know, it's only 30,000 people that live in my town. We have three Starbucks. You know what I mean? Like, I figure it's like that everywhere else, right?
I think so.
You know, I honestly don't know. I don't know about the middle of the country.
But it's not exotic.
No.
Why couldn't they find a company to do coffee from somewhere else in the world?
Well, they do have the Sumatra blend. Where's Sumatra? Is that in Africa?
No, it's in Asia.
It's Asia.
Well, whatever. Then we'll move it to Asia.
There you go.
Coffee can be grown anywhere, right? There's a Kenyan blend.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It's not. They could do it. It's the signage out front. No, they do. Starbucks does offer a Kenyan blend and a Sumatra blend.
But if that's what they focus on,
right? And they might, like, maybe the one in Animal Kingdom, they'll feature the Clover machine. I don't know if you're familiar with this, but the flagships Starbucks stores have a Clover machine, which brews individual cups of any of their blends. You know what I mean? They don't just have the three coffees of the day.
Okay.
They'll do any of their blends for you on the spot, which is really wonderful. And they have sort of like very high-end blends, you know, a little bit more expensive. But they could offer coffee from around the world. And that would be kind of neat if they had a Clover machine at this one. I don't know. That would be neat.
We shall see.
I sound like I don't know what I'm talking about. Like I'm on LSD right now. I sound like the most crazy person in the world.
Why?
Because nobody has heard of this clover machine.
I have not, but I'm not a Starbucks frequenter, so I'm deferring to your knowledge on this subject.
We'll see what happens. I'm curious, if not a little bit apprehensive about it.
Right, right. If Starbucks wants to do what some of the other companies have done, which is to kind of offer, you know, if they're going to put it in Harambe and they're going to offer some kind of more African style things, and right, they're going to, you know, just be the person that does that, I'm fine with that. Just like I'm fine with the Yak and Yeti not being a Disney thing. I'm fine with that because they're doing an appropriate thing. They're just
Yak and Yeti's theming is impeccable.
Right.
It's perfect.
Right.
It couldn't be better.
And they also, what's on the menu is at least waving towards what's supposed to be in that area.
Well,
It's in that direction. They're not serving hot dogs and hamburgers.
No, they're serving freaking spaghetti with ginger on it. I cannot stand Yak and Yeti. Gross.
Let's not digress too much, Mike.
They do have sriracha on the table. Sorry. Continue.
What's next, Mike?
Okay. For all those big, huge fans of Mo Rockin', they can rest easy. They've built a new stage across the way from the old stage, next to the pavilion, sort of. So now Mo Rockin' will have a very own stage now that the Spiced Road table is coming. So personally, I can't really stand Mo Rockin', but see that as it may.
Lay it out there, will you?
They are not the worst thing in Epcot. They're the second worst thing in Epcot after Off Kilter.
Oh, God.
After Off Kilter, but they are pretty dang bad. I cannot sit there and enjoy my vegetable platter from Tangerine Cafe while that screeching horrible mess is on.
I am no fan of Off Kilter as opposed to the host of the show.
I am a fan.
I will say Mo Rockin's worse than Off Kilter.
Yeah?
I
agree. Off Kilter is the worst.
I haven't actually sat and watched Mo Rockin' ever. So I
neither have I.
I've just seen them. I know what it looks like. You
there's
know?
No way I could. But if I'm sitting there already eating a Tangerine Cafe and their set starts and that woman with her back rolls starts belly dancing and I just want to chop my head off with a guillotine, that's the worst.
Well, here's the thing about Mo Rockin'. It kind of has that weird divine vibe where when you're walking, when you see the people standing and watching them play.
Yes. Yes.
And kind of has that weird, you know, creepy guy standing there looking at her thing.
It's creepy.
Yeah. I mean, maybe I'm making too much of that. That's why. But I
did. No, you're not. You're not making too much. You're making not enough about it. It's creepy. When men watch her dance, it's creepy. And I don't like it at all.
I like the talent, the shows in Epcot that sort of enhance the cultural aspect of the area. I really like the mariachi band, for example, in Mexico.
Yes.
Right.
I like the drummers in Japan. Those.
Oh, yes.
You don't really sit and watch them.
Sure.
But they add to the ambiance.
They add so much to the ambiance.
I agree. Right.
Mo Rockin' and Off Kilter do not. They distract you from
it. No, it becomes a county fair all of a sudden. Yeah. I feel like I'm at a county fair and I should be eating like a huge, I don't know, a turkey leg, for instance, and just sort of like watching a pie eating contest while it's going on. Yeah. It's the opposite of art. It's the opposite of atmosphere, you know?
I agree.
It's forced and horrible.
I mean, Off Kilter, I personally like them. I think I like the band. I don't understand who thought you should put them there. Because first of all, there's not a single Canadian in the entire band.
Seriously?
There's not a single Canadian in the entire band.
Why are they there then?
I have no idea. The guy who's the piper who is from Florida. The guy who is the bass player who does the other singing is Irish. Then there's a guy playing keyboards who's Puerto Rican. There's a guy on guitar from Kentucky.
Let's give it a few years and maybe Alanis Morissette and Drake can start a hybrid band. And they can be the only people who play there.
And that's the other weird thing about them is that for the longest time, now recently they've started doing what you would consider like Canadian rock songs. They've been doing like, you know, not Alanis Morissette, but they've been doing other such things. But
Like what? I need
Like Bare Naked Ladies. Who's the one that sings "Taking Care of Business"? They're Canadian. Bryan Adams. I've heard them do a Bryan Adams tune.
I literally don't know what any of those words are that you're saying.
Okay, what?
Bare Naked Adams.
Rest assured. Rest assured, they're Canadian acts. So they have had that. Obviously, somebody told them they had to, because when I got into listening to them and would stop and listen, they just would do Irish tunes.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't matter to me that they were not Canadian. I don't really care.
No, they distract from, I mean, you hear them from, I could be in France. I'm hearing, you know, Bryan Adams songs or Bare Naked Adams songs.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Yeah, I don't like it at all.
I just don't like popular music being played in the park, I guess. You know?
Well,
I guess
Moroccan
I don't
doesn't do that.
I have to tell you,
Moroccan plays that Sting song.
Really?
Yes. What's that song? They always play it on Stinkin' Mouse World Radio. It makes me want to die. I love Mouse World Radio, and I like Mike Newell quite a bit, but when that song comes on, I have to turn on Sorcerer Radio. I'm sorry. Like, I have to switch over. I'm sorry, just even if it's for 10 minutes. It's that Sting song that sounds like Moroccan should be playing.
I have no idea what it is.
It's not good.
What's next, Mike?
All right. The villains have taken over Celebrate the Magic, or at least they started to, and I guess they'll be playing this during the Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween party. It's kind of blah. I don't know if you've had a chance to look at it. There really isn't too much to it. Have you, Dave or Andrew, have you checked it out?
So you're talking about the castle projection show, correct?
Correct.
And the, like, 5-minute, or not even 5 minutes, the very short sort of Halloween tag, correct?
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
You're saying that they are actually playing this, I presume, every night from now until November, not just Mickey's Not So Scary.
I believe that is correct.
That must be correct. Because I doubt they'll change it out for every, you know, every other day.
Yeah, sure.
I don't mind it so much. I almost wish that they had done a exclusive only Halloween show, sort of. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't like that the tag is so short.
Right, you know? And there's really not too much to it. I'm not going to sit there and criticize it. It was just whatever. I mean, it's something new, I guess.
It's neat that they can change it out. I think the last one, the last sort of like tag that I saw was the Valentine's Day one. And that wasn't bad. Like, that was kind of cute. It's neat that they can change it out, but it doesn't change the whole feel of the show.
Right.
You know, this current iteration of the castle show is actually really great. It's better than the first one, you know, that's gone through like two sort of different versions. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a good show. It's kind of really great. And I like that they can change it just a little bit seasonally.
I don't disagree with you.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, it's not my choice of villains. You know what I mean? It was like Ursula and Chernabog and somebody else. I don't know. Maleficent, I'm sure. She's on everything.
Hades too, right? Was Hades on there?
Oh, I didn't. I turned it off halfway through.
What's next?
I have very short attention span. Sure.
What's next?
In the tradition of the raps that you get on the monorail, apparently we're getting bus raps now.
Oh, who cares?
There's a Disney Channel Phineas and Ferb Marvel mashup.
That's great.
Rap.
I don't get why are they debuting these after that show was on.
I know, it was like a month or so ago now.
It was. That seems so silly to me.
Yeah. I mean, you still see it all the time on the channel, I guess. But
I'm sure.
Maybe the DVD's coming out.
Oh, maybe. Oh, probably. Probably, actually.
Maybe.
I love Phineas and Ferb. I haven't seen this episode yet. You know, I tend to catch things like 5 months after they happen. Mm-hmm. But I don't like bus raps, and I don't like monorail raps. So this, you know, I hate the idea.
To me, the bus rap means a lot less to me than the monorail rap. The monorail rap, you know, the monorail has some sort of... what's the word I'm looking for? You know, it's people care about the monorail. They care about what it looks like. They care that it goes
right. The monorail is culturally significant.
Right.
And the bus isn't. Nobody is like, oh, did you ride the bus? You know?
Yeah. No, so if they wrap every single bus, it really wouldn't matter to me one way or the other, to be honest.
Mean nothing to me at all.
Seriously? I don't like it. I just like seeing the standard Disney buses.
I don't like it either, but it's not something that I would even notice.
They just got to stop wrapping things. It really bothers me.
That's kind of where I am. You know, that's what I feel is that, you know, it's just another one of these marketing campaigns that they're throwing out there that, you know, whatever.
If they're going to wrap anything, wrap the bus. I don't care about the bus. Don't wrap on rails. Don't wrap, you know, don't put stuff in parks. wrap the bus and do your advertisement there. I'm fine with that. I really am.
Yeah.
What's next, okay. Mike?
All right. In a news story that I know Dave has is sitting on the edge of his seat about, the Nestle tea is gone, and it's now Twinings of London, or Twinings, or however you want to pronounce it.
I go Twinings. I say Twinings.
Is it Twinings?
I say Twinings.
That's fine. I'll go with what you say.
Dave, are you not a tea fan? Are you that upset to talk about this?
No, I'm not upset to talk about it. I just don't see you.
Are you serious?
It's just not that big a deal. It's one.
You're kidding, right? This is a huge deal. Underplaying it.
It's one, underwhelming tea company in place of taking the place of another underwhelming tea company. The Twinings is a little bit better.
I drink a lot of tea. You know, I drink a lot in general. Like, just if it's a beverage, just assume that I drink a lot of it.
Okay.
As far as tea goes, Twinings is, it's not that, okay. Twinings is no better than like Lipton, right? Okay, Lipton is like your standard, like sort of American black tea, mm-hmm. which is not bad. Twinings is on, their black tea is kind of on the same level as that, but the Nest tea is like dirt. Like Nest tea is horrible. We're talking like McDonald's tea. Like if you're gonna get a hot tea at McDonald's in the styrofoam cup, it kind of has the same flavor, but if you ground like horse poo in it, like that's the kind of flavor that Nest tea has. It's not that Twinings is great, it's that it's so much better. Does that make sense?
Yep.
It does.
Does my horse poo metaphor translate?
It does. Perfectly.
Thank you.
But here on a Animal Kingdom podcast, we have to call it dung or scat.
Yeah, dung or scat?
Or what droppings.
What about guano? Or does that just birds and bats?
We'll get to that later.
Okay. I like to call my doo-doo guano. I was the original guano Andy.
So you don't have the same nostalgic feeling for Nescafe?
No, as Nescafe?
Yeah,
absolutely not. Because when I'm on vacation, I exclusively drink Nescafe.
But you don't really like Nescafe, right?
What do you mean? Of course I do.
But you don't drink it at home, though, right?
No, because it's special at Disney World.
Because it's dreadful and he doesn't want to hurt himself at home.
No, when I'm at home, I drink Maxwell House French Roast when I'm, in the morning, because that's my home coffee beverage. When I'm at Disney World, I drink something totally different because that will henceforth remind me of vacation.
Right.
Does that make sense? Just like I can't get carried away, even though you guys admittedly know, like, I'll randomly listen to like Animal Kingdom Lodge background music loop at home, I can't overdo that or it loses its special nature,
right? Because you listen to it every day, you get bored with it after a while.
It just becomes background noise and not something special in the background. It's a very fine line. Mm-hmm. And for the record, I do really love Nescafe. Actually, it's just not something I would drink on a daily basis because it has sugar in it, and I don't really drink sugar.
But you actually like the flavor of Nescafe, other than reminding you of the parks and stuff.
Like I said, for the record, I really enjoy Nescafe.
I have a feeling Mike just finds this very hard to believe.
No, not at all. I really
like it. It's not coffee. I don't like it as coffee. It's just not coffee. It's a whole other caffeinated beverage.
It's a whole another experience.
I don't consider it coffee at all. It's not coffee. Well, it's something else.
I have to tell you, I have the same kind of feeling. There's the before Nescafe, or at least was Down Egberts, was the was the official coffee of Disney World. Uh-huh. You very rarely find it, to be honest. There's a couple of guests by me that have it.
Yeah.
And whenever I have it, I just think of Disney World from back 15 years ago, whatever it was. I have the same exact feeling, just with a different drink. But I understand what you're saying.
I think,
but I do actually like it. If there was somewhere up here that had a Nescafe machine, it's not, because Nescafe you buy at like a CVS or at the grocery store is not the same. Trust me, I've tried it. I've bought it and tried it at home. It's not the same thing. It's the Nescafe that comes out of the machines. It's a very special thing and very different, but it's not coffee.
Right, so if they had a place by you, every once in a while you would go get it just to be nostalgic.
Once, once it's totally gone from Disney World, you bet your ass I would.
No, that's how I feel about Darwin Egberts. Every once in a while I'll go get one because it just reminds me of it. Absolutely.
Totally.
What's next?
Last and...
You guys hate having me on the show.
No, I hate talking about coffee. What's next? Really?
There's a lot of coffee on this show.
There's been an enormous amount of coffee.
There's been three topics that have ended up talking about coffee and horse poop.
We could have talked about the coffee in Morocco, which is quite good. But anyway, we'll skip.
Please.
There apparently is new FastPass Plus and standby line signage at the Haunted Mansion. So that is gearing up for FastPass Plus. And I have not partaken in the FastPass Plus thing, but I know, Andrew, you have, correct?
We are in the midst of it right now. Me and Adam have an upcoming trip, the date of which will remain fully disclosed. We are staying at Jumbo House, DVC. And we were not selected. I don't want to say that because it's basically everybody. This is the official rollout or whatever of My Magic Plus and Magic Pans and whatever, FastPass Plus. So I've been so stressed out about this for months because we've had this trip booked forever. And I've been so stressed out. Oh, they're going to announce it and we're only going to have like 2 days to book all of our FastPasses and stuff. Thank God we had, you know, a while to do it. And let me just tell you, it sucks. It's the worst. It's the worst thing that ever happened in my life. Like having to book fast passes because their website is just horrible and it crashes at the blink of an eye for no apparent reason. It's horrible. And I'm not going to pretend like I'm the one doing this. I make Adam do everything, but I'll be sitting next to him and I'll see on his face he's upset because it crashed.
Yeah.
I mean, I normally don't pay attention, but I could tell.
When they told me Disney was going to have a system whereby you would be booking, where all of the guests would be booking these things in advance, the first thing that came to my mind was they can't handle it. Because and one thing I've learned is Disney is about 8 to 10 years technologically behind the rest of the world.
Oh my God.
With everything they do. I mean, they can't even get an app to run right.
Yeah, totally. Oh, the app is the worst.
The app is terrible. So, I mean, I don't understand how this is going to work. And it does. I'm not excited about it at all. And you saying that, Andrew, just makes me feel just
booking
even
more. Booking it is horrible. Now, it does drastically change the dynamic of how we're going to tour the park. You know, we are early to rise kind of people. We're at rope drops, you know, 9 out of 10 days usually. Right. Now, it's going to change how we do that. For instance, on one of our first days on our trip, we are planning on being at Animal Kingdom, obviously. And so we have fast passes booked for Expedition Everest, Kilimanjaro Safari, and the Mickey meet and greet, which is interesting, you know, because that's normally not something I'm willing to wait in line for, is a character meet and greet. Right. Normally I rope drop those, for instance. But the interesting thing about it is our Kilimanjaro Safari FastPass is from 9 to 10 in the morning, correct? And then Expedition Everest from 10 to 11 or whatever, you know, whatever it might be. That means that we don't have to rope drop this park at all. You know what I'm saying? Because I could just show up at 9:30, go on Kilimanjaro Safari, no problem, walk on Expedition Everest, even if it's 10:35, you know, I get, you know, even if it's mid-morning, I don't even have to be there for rope drop anymore. It changes the dynamic drastically.
But that doesn't sound like it's a negative.
No, it's a positive.
Okay, good.
That's a positive. Because what we used to do is we would show up at 8:30 in the morning, which is early, show up at 8:30, run, hustle to Expedition Everest, hustle to Kilimanjaro Safari, whatever. But we had to be up so early to do that.
Right.
Now, because we stay at the hotel right next door, we can literally leave the hotel at like 9:15, even 9:30, and we're fine. You know, which is great. In that case, it works really, really well for our favor. The only thing is, there's something charming about doing a rope drop at any given park.
I agree.
You know, there's something charming about that. We love it.
And I don't like the idea of having to adhere to a schedule that you make months in advance. I mean, that just...
Well, here's the thing. You can change your FastPass Plus reservations up until you use your first one for the day. Okay? So say on several days, me and Adam have them booked for later in the evening for our, like, our second park of the day.
Right.
Okay. So say that day where we were at Animal Kingdom, we didn't have fast pass reservations, but we knew that we were going to be at Illuminations at Epcot that evening. So on certain days we have Test Track, Soarin', and say Maelstrom booked in the evening ahead of time. That is totally boss to have that option.
I agree. That I didn't even think of that.
You book them for later in the night for your second park of the day. Right. Ignore your rope drop park.
There you go.
And it's actually phenomenal. Like, the thought of doing that, we're going to see how it goes after we've done this trip. But apparently it's going to be great. Like it seems like it's going to be amazing.
Now, how come I haven't been contacted about this?
Because it hasn't rolled out to all resorts yet. But it will by the end of the year.
And you were contacted? Like, they reached out?
Well, I had been bugging Adam. I said, Adam, make sure you're checking the Disney website every single day, because I know that it's rolled out at Animal Kingdom DVC Jumbo House. Please keep checking. Please keep checking. Then one day he checked, and one day we were able to do it. And then shortly afterwards, we got a notification in the mail, like a letter, and then 2 days after that, we got our Magic Bands.
Are you guys annual pass holders?
You could say that, yes. I'm not going to disclose why I'm saying it like that on the air.
Okay, that's fine. But so
yes, we are.
Okay,
yes,
so you got banned. Did you have to tell them to replace your cards with bands?
Yes, you punch in the number.
You have to tell them to do it. Okay.
Well, you do it online. Everything's online. You punch in your number. Then they confirm everything at the desk, I'm assuming, when you check into your hotel.
I haven't been offered any information on this, Mike. Have you?
Nope.
Yeah, nothing.
Okay. Macadamia.
So am I.
You guys should relish your last trip using regular FastPass then, because this will likely be your last trip ever using a regular FastPass.
Oh, I'm sure it will be. I mean, I don't know if I'm going back until probably minutes.
I'm depressed because I used my last chance to use a FastPass on my last trip, and I didn't even know it was my last time.
There you go.
You know, because I can't use regular FastPass now, and it kind of blows.
Is that it, Mike? Are we
We are done.
All right, let's take another short break, and then we're coming back to discuss the Flights of Wonder on Radio Harambe.
Come on, Dad. Take it home!
If you're like me, you're an Animal Kingdom fan who's just a bit tired of listening to so-called Disney experts who criticize our beloved park for being a, quote, half-day park. Well, it's time to put your frustrations into action by going to the Jumbo Everyone store at Zazzle.com/JumboEveryone and picking up one of our exclusive new Not a Half-Day Park t-shirts. They look great. And we will donate 50% of the profits to our conservation partners. The rest of it will go to helping keep Radio Harambe on the air and JumboEveryone.com on the web. Wear it the next time you visit the parks, or even better, the next time you attend a Disney fan meetup. Go to Zazzle.com/JumboEveryone today and wear your Animal Kingdom pride for all to see. Welcome back to Radio Harambe. I am Dave McBride. Joining me tonight is Safari Mike and Andrew of the amazing Disney Hipsters Empire. We'll talk more about that later on. Our feature for the day, and for those of you who listened to episode 7, where another member of the Disney Hipster Empire was on, Jamie discussed the shopping. Now, in that, I controversially referred to her as the brains behind the Disney Hipsters. And the only reason why I would say that, I'm going to backpedal a bit on that, is because, first of all, I've never personally met her. so I must defer to the other gentleman on the podcast over that. but she was the one who came up with the idea of picking these topics and, you know, doing this kind of a solo thing where we're not having the whole show on as they would, instead bringing each one of the members of the show onto ours individually. So
yeah, you don't want us all on your show at once. We would commandeer the whole damn thing.
Which is fine. I'm more than willing to do that.
You shouldn't be willing.
So what we wanted to do, she decided we were going to discuss the Flights of Wonder. Now, my first question is, she picked this topic, correct, guys?
Yes.
I guess. I just found out about this.
Andrew, why would she pick this topic for you?
I don't know. Maybe because I love it so much.
Okay.
And it's amazing. Maybe she's like super nice and decided to pick something that I love. And I know that Jamie doesn't actually like it that much, I think.
Maybe that's why she didn't want to do it.
She does.
Well, I know she didn't want to do it, but I guess she picked me because I love it.
Is she afraid of birds?
I don't think so.
Some people are.
She just doesn't like it. For some reason, she doesn't like the show. I don't know.
Some people are a little freaked out by birds.
Well, there's very little in Disney World that Jamie doesn't like, but I do think this is one of them.
So let me read for the folks who've never done Flights of Wonder, who've never been to it. Let me read the official Disney description. It says, "Relax under the canvas canopy in the shady sanctuary that is what remains of the Maharaja's rule. Mm-hmm. Behold the caravan stage, the ruins that are now the refuge for a dazzling array of birds. An entertaining and informative bird trainer welcomes you to this mystical place." I love these words they use. "With help," in quotes, mm-hmm, "from Guano Joe or Jane." And I've actually never seen a show with Jane.
Oh, me either. Gross. Kill myself.
Amusing explorer who fears birds more than a bit. The trainer introduces you to a fascinating natural behaviors and often humorous talents of at least 20 specific exotic birds. We'll go through those later. The caravan stage itself sits just outside of the confines of what you would call Anandapur, the town section of Asia. Mm-hmm. And it's placed there for a reason. It's on the road towards Africa. And it's actually used now as during the design phase as something of a transition device. There are other ones of these that are used in more famously in the Magic Kingdom of transitioning you into one from one world to another.
Right.
And it does that because it is themed to look like a stop along the trade routes, the spice trade routes that led between East Africa and the Far East in this area of Asia. And obviously the name caravan pretty much gives that away. So before we get into the show, let's start there at the aesthetics of the actual building itself, guys.
Well, it does have, I never really thought about it. I knew it was the caravan stage, but it does sort of have that sort of transient appeal to it. You know, it sort of looks like you could move it around because it is mostly fabric. A lot of the stages, even the signage.
Right.
You know, it looks like you could move it very easily.
Yeah, it's supposed to look like sort of like a camel rest stop along.
Yeah.
Like the Spice Road or the Silk Road that went across the desert from Africa to Asia. That's what it's
called.
It's like a nomadic feel to it.
Right.
But yet it still is supposed to be the ruins of the Maharajas, who we talked about during the Maharaja Jungle Trek. So while it, you know, it's supposed to be sort of the entrance point into Anandapur. You know, you're kind of
And the stage itself, once you go under the signage and below the canopy and you see the actual stage where the animals perform, the actual stage and the rock work and everything does look like it could be anywhere in Anandapur. It looks like it could be on the Maharaja Jungle Trek.
Right.
It really does. Like, it looks... It fits right in. It's beautiful.
Now, have you guys, either one of you guys, seen any of the pre-shows?
Of course.
Yeah, I love them.
Of course. With the owl?
I love them.
Yep. I love that owl.
Yeah. I have so many great photographs of that owl staring at me. It's really cool.
The spectacled owl, right? The one that kind of looks like a fuzzball?
There's actually two of them. There is one that looks like a horned owl.
Yeah.
Okay. As well.
I think I've seen the horned owl.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's
sometimes they're a little different, but they're majestic birds. I mean, it's a beautiful bird.
It's really neat. She'll get him to turn his head all the way around, mm-hmm, and that's really cool and freaky and awesome. I do love that. And that sort of like acts as a way to get people to go into the show.
Yes.
You know, for sure. Like, it's maybe like 5 minutes and the cast member will ask you questions about owls. It's really fascinating.
Now we step into the show,
mm-hmm,
and Mike, before we go into the story of the show, uh-huh, talk about some of the species they're going to find there. Like, there's a few of them that have sort of top billing, I would say.
Ugh.
each like the name.
That
one.
Was horrible. That was the worst.
I couldn't help it.
That was the worst.
He's been working on that all day.
Yeah, keep trying.
I wanted to get it out before I forgot it. Go ahead.
Well, there's you mean like Poe, the white-necked raven?
Who doesn't love Poe?
There's
he tears up the flag. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I love Poe. He's the one that actually steals Guano Joe's flag and flies away with it. And there's Edgar, the Black Vulture. And, of course, there's the famous Fraser Crane.
Don't. That's the worst. That's the worst. Sorry. No, that's not the worst. The worst is at the end. Continue.
I was going to save that for the end, but we will.
Okay, so
no, we can save that till the end.
Yeah,
okay. It deserves a fitting finale.
So these, each one of these species of birds are put into the context of what always kind of reminded me of when I was a kid seeing the SeaWorld shows, where you'd have, you know, like a seal come up and do something in the context of some kind of like goofy show. The only difference is that there's a message in this show, which we'll get to later. But discuss the story behind the show, Andrew. Discuss what we're getting here.
Okay, so the cast member, there's one very talented cast member. You know, there's a rotation of them. They're usually young and pretty attractive cast member. They come out and they tell the audience, obviously, that they're going to be giving demonstrations of birds. Sort of extraordinary birds and their natural behaviors. This isn't like they make a point of saying natural behaviors. It's not going to be birds on little bicycles, etc. Okay, and they give a couple like really great examples. Mike, maybe you know what is the bird that jumps up and eats the grape out of the air?
Sure, that's the trumpeter hornbill.
I love when they do that. They throw a grape up in the air and this bird will catch it anywhere that you throw it, and it's amazing. And they usually get a little kid to throw it too, and there's a funny little quip of a joke there that's really great. Anyway, halfway through the am I going through the whole show real quick?
Go ahead, yeah.
Okay, so halfway through, not halfway through, like three jokes into it, out comes Guano Joe, who is a tour guide who's sort of gotten lost and gotten his tour group lost. And he comes on stage and he's sort of bumbling and stupid and apparently has a horrible fear of birds. And because he's this famous explorer named Guano Joe, the cast member gets him involved with the show and tries to sort of teach him about birds a little bit, why he shouldn't be scared about them and why they're such amazing creatures and about their natural behaviors. So it's sort of just... The main point of the show is gets off course for a second, then gets right back on course with a couple funny, corny, horribly corny jokes.
They are horribly corny, but
they are
the worst. Like, I think I cringe every time I watch this show, but I love it.
But there's corny. It's the kind of corny jokes you find everywhere. Let's be honest. I mean, this.
I guess they're the kind of corny jokes you would expect to find at Disney World. I guess.
Yeah. During the daytime. I mean,
they're pretty. They're pretty bad.
Yeah.
they're pretty bad. But every once in a while, you'll like Guano Joe might make a sort of a topical crack. Like last time he made like a Honey Boo Boo joke and I thought it was pretty funny.
Oh, you know, I've never heard him do that.
No, I haven't either.
No, he'll be topical every once in a while, just throw a little quip in there, and I like that.
So now within the context of the story, pull out some highlights of the things, you know, you mentioned the bird that pulls the grape out of the air.
Yes, that is fabulous. I love when that bird gets a grape. There's another bird. Again, I don't know what species these are at all because I'm so amazed. My like jaw is on the floor because it's so amazing. But there's a bird that will fly out and take a dollar bill out of someone's hand. What kind of bird is that?
Isn't that the white-necked raven too?
Oh, no, I don't think it's a raven. Maybe it's a different bird. No, it's not. I've had him pull the dollar out of my hand many times.
Oh, really? You got to hold the dollar?
I don't even sit down when I get in the stage. I stand up the whole time waiting. Like, I don't wait until they take volunteers. I'm already standing with the dollar bill.
Holding
like
your dollar in your hand?
Yes, for the first 25 minutes of the show, waiting for that bird to come out. So,
I've seen the white-necked raven do it.
Yeah, I think a couple different birds can do it, actually. Mm-hmm. So an audience member, there's a lot of audience participation in the show. And the cast member on stage will say, hey, does anybody have a dollar bill? and, you know, you raise up your dollar or whatever, and she'll say, hey, you, sir, right there in the Disney hipster shirt, go ahead and stand up, hold out your dollar bill, and this bird's going to fly over and just don't move, and he's going to take it. And he does, and then she makes this funny joke about how she's going to keep it, okay?
Right.
And then eventually the bird does, the bird flies it back and gives it back to you. It's really, really cool.
And the one that always sticks out to me is this, I think it's a, Mike, it's a gray parrot that sings.
Correct. It's a green parrot that sings.
Yes. And they do the little math joke, right?
Yes.
Correct.
I love that part. And they get a kid up there to do like the little talking bit with him, and the bird can talk. And she makes a, like sort of a remark about how that is in fact a natural behavior of the bird, like mimicking noises.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that, like, you know, it's not a trick. It's something that they do in nature, which I think is great.
My personal favorite, I think, is the Harris hawk. I love that hawk.
That, yeah?
Yeah, the one that flies, it'll do a couple of laps over the people back and forth.
That's a showstopper.
Yeah, yeah. He's so beautiful. And
yeah.
I just like how Harris hawks are the only hawks actually that hunt in groups. Like all
that's
hawks.
Amazing.
Yeah, I wish they would point that out and maybe bring a few of them out, but that's okay. It's such a great, it's, like you said, a showstopper.
Yeah, it really is. Absolutely. It's beautiful. And people get so scared that the bird is going to swoop down and poop on you. You know, I've never seen, do they have like little baby diapers on these birds? Because I've never seen anyone get pooped on. And can you imagine like a giant hawk doo-doo in your hair? What does Disney give you if a hawk poops in your hair?
I have no idea.
Now they're
a fast pass to Cali River Rapids.
Exactly, yeah, to get a little shower. There's also some rats in this show too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I love that part with the rats.
I mean, no spoiler.
I don't want to spoil the show for anyone, but there are rats in the show, and that's a very entertaining moment.
They're right off the top too.
Right, exactly.
In the beginning. Now, Mike, what's the bird that people sit and get ready to take the picture that flies right in front of them?
That's a great horned owl. They do that with the owl.
Now they've done it with other things too. I think they switch up these birds a lot.
They do. They will do it with the. I think they've done it with the vulture, maybe.
I've seen them do that with a crane before.
I was going to say a crane.
I've always seen it with a crane. To be fair, I've always seen it with a crane.
I'm just looking at the pictures now. They show various different birds taking the dollar bill, like a cockatiel.
Isn't that neat?
Yeah.
I think that's so cool that it could be a different show every time.
Right.
You know.
Now, Mike, the question everybody asks is, how do they keep these birds from flying away?
Well, I mean, technically, they could fly away if they wanted to. But, you know, they know where their food is. They're trained to return, and they just do. There are plenty of shows like this in different zoos throughout the country where, you know, eagles will fly around. And they used to have it at the Bronx Zoo, and I could tell you there was one afternoon where an eagle would not come down. They were there for hours trying to get him to come down. Eventually he did, but it's just training. That's exactly what it is. Eventually they're going to go where they know the food is, and, you know, that's what they do.
That's the funny thing, though, because the whole emphasis is them on being like natural behaviors or whatever, but that's not natural. You know what I mean? For them to know that this person's going to give me food, so I'm just going to fly to them over and over again. Like, they'd be scared out of their minds, and they would be flying away from humans all the time.
That is true, yeah.
That bothers me a little bit. Are we going to talk about the real showstopper, something that literally ends the show?
Well,
sure we are. Absolutely.
But let's do it in context of what it's there for.
Yeah.
The conservation message behind it. So, Andrew, go ahead. Tell us what you've been what you're holding back here.
Okay, I'm going to put it into context, just like you said. So, towards the end of the show, Guano Joe has gone through this huge transformation. He loves birds. He even fed a bird, even at this moment with a baby vulture, and he loves birds. Then he's like, "How am I going to conserve these beautiful creatures that are disappearing in the wild?" And, well, of course, we have a message, and out comes, what is it, Hope?
Hope, yep.
Yes. Okay, because I sometimes want to call it freedom, but that's just me being a... So, its name is Hope, and it's an American bald eagle, which is a truly impressive bird on both, like, size and beauty. Just a gorgeous bird. But the sort of trashy USA kind of moment that the crowd has when this bird comes out is enough to make you never want to go back to the show. It is the worst moment ever. Like, I love birds. I love animals in general. I really, like, I just adore them. But I don't love Americans. And I hate when this happens and everyone gets so riled up. It's like an episode of Jerry Springer. You know, they're so excited to see this American bald eagle, which the whole point of it is that they're no longer even endangered, right? Because we've done such a good job at conserving these creatures and sort of, you know, giving them back their habitat, not using pesticides, etc., which is really, really outstanding. But it churns my stomach every time they're like, and this is hope, our American bald eagle. And everyone gets excited and they usually start clapping. And sometimes I've seen standing ovations. It's horrible.
Well, I personally don't have the same stomach churn that you have there.
Seriously?
No, I don't, because I guess I always think of the bald eagle as that one species that everybody kind of recognizes as what good can come out of conservation messages. You know,
I get that
more than the other part of it. You know,
I get that. I sometimes will get a little teary eyed. It depends on how many yak attacks I've drank. And I mean that in a serious way. Like, I get like very emotional if I'm drunk and watching something sweet. But if I'm stone cold sober, it usually just makes me want to vomit. And I love them. And the bird is so beautiful. I don't, not to take away from Hope's beauty, because it's a beautiful bird.
Mike. I don't really relate it to patriotism, to be honest. I mean, I know you do. I just don't get, for me personally, I don't get wrapped up in the whole, oh, this is the national symbol. I'm more of a, that's a really nice looking bird, and, you know, it's off the endangered species list. That's what I sort of focus in on, so I don't really get that kind of stomach churning. I understand what you're saying, but it doesn't really
the national bird of the United States. Mm-hmm. Okay, I get that. But I mean, maybe some other country had a bird that is endangered now that we could talk about.
I agree. I understand that. Yeah, I understand that.
I don't know. I mean, bald eagles are sort of invasive now, to be perfectly honest. Now there's too many of them, to be honest, especially in Florida.
Yeah, I see them flying over Epcot.
You see them flying over everything. There's too many of them in Florida. They eat like, I don't know. I saw a video of one of them eating a little kid. It's horrible. I'm serious. American bald eagles, you can't kill them, but they can kill your babies.
Stop it.
They can. Nobody's controlling that.
I think that video was fake, Andro.
It wasn't fake. I shot the video and sent it up. I mean, I didn't want to stop it because I thought somebody would yell at me for attacking a bird. But it was eating a little kid. I mean, I'm sorry, kid, but this used to be endangered.
Ladies and gentlemen, you do not have to be concerned about bald eagles taking your children away while in fantasy.
You should be. You should be. It's a huge concern.
So, guys, let's talk about what we think about the show, you know, how we would grade it, however we want to go with it.
I prefer a rating system.
Go ahead. Shoot it out there.
You guys come up with one. It's your show.
Go ahead, Dave.
Come up with a rating system.
A rating? Well, give it stars.
Are we doing stars out of attractions in Animal Kingdom or out of attractions in Disney World?
How about out of shows, stage shows at Disney World?
Stage shows at Disney World. Okay, so we have Nemo, Festival of the Lion King, Little Mermaid. What else do we have in comparison? I'm giving it 4 out of 5 stars.
That's what I would do. 4 out of 5.
Yeah. And the only one that will beat it for me is actually Finding Nemo the Musical, which I love.
I would say that I would probably agree with that number. I agree it's the second best. I like the Lion King one better.
Ugh.
I don't like the Nemo one at all. But
oh my God, what's wrong with you?
I know.
Seriously, that Lion King show is horrible. Sorry. No. I mean, I know this is an opinion-based show, but...
But hey, that's what you're here for.
I guess so. That's the worst. I hate Lion King.
No, I love the Lion King show. Not a big fan of Nemo. Mike, how do you feel about these three? Where would you put...
Out of those three, I'd go Lion King, Flights of Wonder, Nemo.
I like Nemo.
I don't want to disparage. I mean, Nemo's fine. The puppets I find kind of distracting. I'm not like a huge fan of that kind of art, but it's obviously well done. The music is very good. I just like Lion King better.
Lion King is horrible.
You know what I like about The Lion King, and I know we're going way off the topic here, but that's fine. It doesn't try to retell the story. Like, the thing I can't stand about the Beast show is that it's just retelling it in, like, an abbreviated version, and it does a terrible job of it. The Lion King doesn't try to retell the story. It's just
That's what I like about it.
I don't know. Yeah, we'll differ on that. I haven't seen The Lion King in years. We're going to go see it in a couple weeks. In a couple months.
Early next year.
Sometime in the next year.
And the last thing I'd want to ask you guys before we wrap up is, it seems to me that this is one of these attractions that that whenever somebody says, oh, Animal Kingdom is a half-day park, the next question I always have is, have you ever seen this? And they always say no.
Of course.
Why do you think it's ignored?
Because it seems like half of an attraction. You know what I mean? Like, people walk past it and they're like, oh, it's a bird show, thinking it's going to be a rinky-dink thing that they would see at a carnival. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't realize that Disney's not going to half-ass an attraction. Well, they will, but this is not one of those half-ass attractions.
Right.
You know, I feel like a lot of people think that.
You know what I like about it the most of all? Mm-hmm. Is that the Animal Kingdom... Listen, I've said this before. I've spent a lot of time at the Bronx Zoo. And even though it's a world-class zoo, their birds, the way most zoos show birds are in cages where they can't really be a bird, I don't think.
Right.
Here, you know, they get to fly around. And even in the trails, they're given, you know, those big aviaries where they can, you know, have some space.
Oh, yeah.
So I just love the way that Disney has decided to show birds in their zoo, so to speak.
Absolutely. It's really, really... If you're going to have a bird show, this is the bird show to have.
Absolutely.
It's great. It tells a story. It has a message. Lots of valuable information. Entertaining. Sometimes funny, especially if you're 4 years old. It's really not like it's not a bad show at all. It's great.
Now, Andrew, before we let you go, let's plug the Disney Hipster Empire.
Yeah, can I like do a legit plug?
Yes.
Jamie dropped the ball. I'm sorry. she was like, oh, you can follow me on Twitter. I don't even know my own name on Twitter. my name's Jamie. Just type in Jamie on Twitter. I'll come up. But what she meant to say is, if you want to read our daily blog posts, go to DisneyHipsters.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at DisneyHipsters, YouTube.com/DisneyHipsters, Facebook.com/DisneyHipsters, DisneyHips.tumblr.com. We're also on Instagram. We also have two different podcasts available on iTunes. The first one is Disney Hipster Podcast, which is our main show. There's a lot of foul language, so it is for adult ears only, but it's a lot of fun. And then we also have a secondary show called Disney Hipsters 2, which goes over the weekly news in the Disney universe, and that is part of the touringplans.com podcast network. Thank you.
How do you guys keep up with all that?
That
can't be easy.
Lots of Miller 64 and late nights.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And listen, Andrew, I want to thank you you guys have been supporters of us for, you know, for a long time here.
We love you guys.
And I can't thank you enough for all the things you've done to kind of help us, you know, get going and build things in the right direction.
Of course. Of course. You guys are doing a phenomenal job and like really filling a niche market that needed to be filled. And we're eternally grateful, actually.
Well, listen, folks, thank you for listening to Radio Harambe. Don't forget to go to JohnBoEveryone.com where we have all of our attraction views, our attraction reviews, dining, restaurants, all that kind of stuff. Lots of photo galleries. Find you, Andrew, at Disney Hipsters on Twitter.
Yeah, that's the best way to get in contact with us and have some interaction is on Twitter at Disney Hipsters.
You can find me and at Radio Harambe. Mike is at JohnBoEveryone. He is sort of, you know, our Twitter guy. It may take me a couple hours to get back to you, but Mike will be there in seconds. Don't forget, as Andrew said, to go to DisneyHipsters.com. You can go to iTunes, search for both of their shows. Please go there, subscribe to both of them. They're must listens for me. And also, don't forget to go to our conservation store through JohnBoEveryone.com. We have some t-shirts and stuff on there that you can help us so that we can help support our conservation partners who are
out there in the field trying to do what they can to save wildlife. Please subscribe to the show on iTunes, rate us there as well, leave a review, all that stuff. It helps, really does help to get the word out. We're also on Stitcher and Podbean. So, for Andrew of the Disney Hipsters and Safari Mike, I'm Dave McBride. Kwa Harini, go well. Thank you for listening to Radio Harambe. Now utukupu atamilele.